some recent work.
Joel, for posterity, you might want to speak up because you're just using the room mics.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Okay. No, it's okay. All right.
Okay. So, as I'm sure you're aware, the starting point of the simplest cosmological model is that essentially universes at very large scales collapse as profit from genius. So, use that freedom runs to Walker metric. Since we're interested in inflation, we can just start with a simple ansatz where the matter content is assumed to be a fluid in terms of pressure, P, energy density, rho, and the relationship between them. P is W, rho. This is the equation state of the field. So, put this metric into the Einstein equations, you can get the Friedmann equations system. What parameters? H, the Hubble parameter, where it's A dot for A. And for inflation, we have the second derivative of the scale factor. We want to get an accelerating universe to solve the flatness horizon problems. You see that this W parameter here has to be less than minus 3. So, in the simplest inflation models, this is realized using a scalar field rolling down a potential. So, as the field is rolling down the universe in place, eventually the field reaches some minimum, oscillates about the minimum, and decays into a slight degrees of freedom. And you have a stage of preheating to connect the inflation stage to the radiation area. The real bonus here is the fluctuations in the inflation field are stretched, and they become larger than the curvature radius, then they are. And they freeze in, and you get the fluctuations in the curvature perturbation that go on to affect the C and D in the later evolution of the universe. So, the action for a scalar field looks like this. We have two components, the kinetic term and the potential term, two fields of this single field model. The equation of motion for the scalar field is here. We get an explicit expression for the equation of state. If we do have a slow roll model in which the potential terms are dominant over the kinetic terms, then as you can see, the W here is going to be approximately minus 1, which is going to give us an accelerating universe that is dominant. Also, if the field is slowly rolling, then we don't have to worry too much about the double dots, the second derivative of the field with respect to time in this left-hand equation. So, in that case, we can get the second slow roll condition here. And we can rewrite these models in terms of two slow roll parameters. Epsilon and eta, whereas epsilon is a measure of how far you've moved from the standard to sit on by the evolution of H. So H depends on the energy density, and the energy density of the field decreases. And eta is sort of a measure of how curved the inflation trajectory is. Okay, nice. So the condition for inflation in terms of these things is that the slow roll parameter is much very small. We have a number of observational handles on inflation, mostly from the power spectrum of the fluctuations that freeze in. This gives us two important quantities, the power spectrum amplitude that we can match to the Kobe normalization. In single field models, this gives you an idea of what the match should be of the inflation potential. Also, we have the spectral index of the perturbations. In this sense, NS is 1 corresponds to the previous scaling variance spectrum. In this case, we have an observationally favored red tilt effect, so NS is less than 1. We can also consider the running of the spectral index, which is variation of the spectral index with respect to scale, to constraints on that, and also gravitational waves produced during inflation. In terms of scalar ratio here, it's just the quotient of the power spectrum of gravitational waves divided by the power spectrum of scalar. Also, we have gas gravities. This is a much larger topic than I'm going to be talking about in this talk, but the way it's normally characterized is in terms of the nonlinearity parameter, or estimator FNL. I'll be defining it later, talking a bit more about it, but the bounds depend very heavily on the momentum. The momentum shapes are under consideration in this talk. But depending on the shape of the wall, a maximum around order of 300 for certain shapes and 100 for other shapes. But I'll talk a little bit more about that later in the context of DBI inflation. So don't worry about it for now. Okay, so it's quite easy to imagine situations in which multiple scale fields be relevant during inflation. Perhaps stringy time models where many light fields are present, or indeed just their phenomenological interest. So many authors have studied this in the past. So one reason this is particularly interesting is you do not just have an adiabatic spectrum of perturbations, but also isocurvature perturbations. An isocurvature perturbation is one in which you have two fluids, and then overdensity in one is offset by an underdensity in the other. So the curvature perturbation is not really affected. But even though these perturbations are of a different type, the isocurvature perturbations can actually act as a source for the adiabatic perturbations. So curvature perturbation that goes beyond the horizon during the inflationary stage is not necessarily constant in the larger scale. It has some dependence on the later evolution of the fields. So this can lead to some deviations of the amplitude of the power spectrum and also in the spectral index. It's particularly interesting in the two-field model, elegance of dealing with situations, because you can perform a rotation in the field space means you can write the adiabatic and entropic contributions to separate fields to measure and evolve their perturbations and the transfer between the two. So that's an illustration of how this is done. I've got this schematic here from Gordon et al.'s paper, so I've got a field space here between two scale fields, phi and chi. Imagine the perturbations in these two fields. So we perform a field rotation in terms of an angle theta to have one perturbation that's tangential to the background trajectory and one which is orthogonal to it. The one that's tangential is the adiabatic field, the other one is the entropic field. So we can apply these very same ideas to models in which there's a coupling between the two fields. This is a two-field model in which we've got explicit coupling in the form of e to the p to phi next to one of the kinetic energy models, so the North canonical connector. Yeah. This is the sort of thing that I'll show later within the context of my CBI model I'm considering. It's the sort of thing that would arise when one has performed a conformal transformation from a non-minimally coupled model to the Einstein frame, in which the gravity of the action R just takes the standard form. So we have these two fields, phi and chi, and if we get the equation of motion, we see that the coupling...
Is beta just going to be gravitational?
Yes, it is actually... it's just defined by the derivative of... once you're in the Jordan frame, then there'll be some function of the scale of next to r. So if this was f of beta, then it's a derivative of that. With respect to the field.
So you're really just putting it in at this point to keep some generality?
Pretty much, yes. Here, in this model, beta was actually considered to be, in the visual paper, I think beta was not considered to be a constant, but in mine, I think it is considered to be a constant, just because I've already got quite a lot of parameters already in order to do this. But this is exactly the same set of other considerations, so all the definitions of beta, and that will be more detail on the slides. But I can go through them now if you prefer.
So, the other question is, why was one of the fields called an entropic field?
Just because we have sort of the idea of an adiabatic trajectory, and along an adiabatic trajectory, then the entropy will not change. So the entropic field is the one that's orthogonal to the adiabatic trajectory. So it's essentially should not change. It's more of an idea. So we get these two equations of motion, and we define in the same way as before our entropy and adiabatic fields in the background. And the adiabatic, as I say, the entropy field should be evolving in the background, it should be constant on the background trajectory. So the S field has got the derivative of the pressure time of zero, and the adiabatic field should have contributions from both fields. So this is just the way to define just so that it ends up being a problem in the background trajectory. So you define the field rotation in terms of this angle theta, and you set cos theta is one field, is the first field divided by the average, the adiabatic field. Second field has a contribution of the coupling in here. But this is just to get the same sort of procedure as we saw here. So you've got a reasonable splitting along the background trajectory and the problem.
Sorry, just the e to the beta phi is there.
Yeah.
So d sigma is not, you're saying that, so d sigma, it's not just phi dot delta phi and chi dot delta chi then. you've got your e to the beta 5 in that.
So because you're interested in hacking into the kinetic terms, filters this way down. So that if you want to have the splitting, so it's always tangential to the background shape, you have to have the coupling in there somewhere. So it's this is a general feature of if you do this. If you stick anything in there, it's always filters down to this one. And just because of the. I'll actually become a little more clear later on when I do it. It will make it more sense. So we define this field sigma, and we can work out what the equation motion is in the background. And the nice thing is it just looks like a normal scale field. It's a standard thing in terms of potential that depends on the vertical field and the background in this case. So if we work out the Coombe curvature perturbation in this model, it's proportional to q sigma. Q sigma is the Mukunov's Zaki variable for the new field that we define. So the Mukunov's Zaki variable is the gauge invariant perturbation. It's a combination of field perturbation and metric perturbation in longitudinal gauge in such a way that it's a gauge invariant combination. So this Coombe curvature perturbation is going to become would normally just be constant on very large scales, most frozen in inflation. But in this two-field one, this is no longer the case. Calculate the derivative of our respective time. See, it's got a source term proportional to the entropy field. So the entropy field lets the Coombe perturbation change on large scales. We see that the proportionality constant evolves, perhaps as a coupling e to the beta pi. This is always trickling down to affect how the Coombe perturbation is evolving. I'm showing that to illustrate to compare with some properties from the one that's going to show in later slides. But inflationary predictions are generally quite robust in this idea of having scaling variance, scaling variance in the curvature perturbation. Something that's relatively easy to realize in a wide variety of models. But what we really want to do is understand where this comes from some sort of fundamental theory. And so what you might want to do, and what is quite a lot of interest in doing, is in some sort of stringy framework. Because there's A, there's a lot of scale theories around, and B, string theories would be a model of a very fundamental model. Inflation is important, and you should be able to realize it within this framework. So there are lots of scale theories around inflation associated with moduli and the like. So if we have some light scalars, we can drive inflation. But if we have too many, this can be a problem. The sort of mechanisms that we've learned in the last couple of slides become important, and you start to influence the curvature perturbation on large scales, and you'd like it to be constant. As well as this, if you have any heavy fields around your inflation, then they're not going to contribute in the same way as the light scalar fields, but it will contribute to the overall potential that the light scalar that is driving inflation will feel. This further complicates the user problem, which is a problem of getting corrections to the very, very flat potential you need. Standard slow roll inflation. One way that's been considered to get around these problems is DVI inflation, theoretical impulse inflation, so called because the role of the inflation is played by the radial coordinate of a D3 ring in a compactified space, which has a theoretical impulse action on the next slide. So the situation is one in which we have space. Within this compactified space, we have a highly warped region in the spread. And in what's called the UV models, the frame starts at the top of the frame and moves down to the bottom. And as it does so, its dynamics are affected by the warping. It's position dependent. And the speed limit is imposed upon its motion. So even if it's on a very, very steep potential, too steep to pass by normal slow roll inflation, you can end up with a slowly moving. Field and can drive inflation. So the action for the EVI field looks like this. And there's three elements I want to draw your attention to. First one, the warp factor F, second one, the boost factor gamma, the third one is the potential. So I'll go through these three elements separately. So the warp factor is determined by the geometry of the throat. The brain happens to find itself in. This is normally normally leads into the equivalent of stress on the brain, which is sort of a water conical cap on the top to give the singularity. So, far away from the tip of the fridge, the geometry is approximately AES. So, but very, very close to the tip of the fridge, the warping is constant, not very dependent on the fridge. So, normally, rather than dealing with the full Kavanaugh stress on the fridge, you want to approximate this in the phenomenological models that you want to take into consideration. We have a two-parameter ansatz here, which is known as the mass capturation, which far away from the throat, we have the ADS, far away from the tip of the throat, we have the ADS solution lambda over chi to the power 4, and very, very close to the tip of the throat, this mu parameter, which is the mass scale that determines when you're getting close to the physics, or when you're getting close to the tip of the throat. Very close to the tip, you just get lambda over mu to the power 4. So you get a very, you're realizing both the scenarios you get in the more complicated scenario. So just to illustrate these approximations, I've taken this video from Keksemeti, pronunciation wrong every time, but Keksemeti et al. So this graph tau represents a radial coordinate on the probe, and you see that far away, all these lines which represent different geometries all converge to a single warping. It's very clear. But close into the probe, you have to start caring about what sort of geometry we're getting this close to the tip. So the small dotted line here is the full Kavanaugh stress test solution. The large dashed line is the AES solution, and the red one is the mass gap solution there. So at the very, very tip of the probe, then the mass gap does start to approximate the full Kavanaugh stress test, I think, is clearing off the constant for a very, very small arc, so very close to the bottom of the probe.
But the ADS solution should be warping off to infinity.
It does. It doesn't, like, you have, they kind of cut it off. Here, they've matched it at both, they've matched it at both, the far away from the tip of the throat and also very close to it. So, they just cut it off at a point where they kind of meet roughly the right place. But, when people do these things in ADS, they assume the DBR inflation ends with a bound.
But you've only got one parameter to tune, it's just the ADS is just like, you know, that thing without a mu, right?
Yeah. So they match it far away from the probe, so that's why the lines will converge. And here it kind of goes through here, but it would really just go one and not one.
But I think what I'm saying is if you've only got one parameter, you can't match it at two points.
Yeah.
So I'm just slightly baffled by that.
Oh, I think what's going on here is they're kind of matching it. They're matching it only very far away and just letting it go.
So they want to have them meeting at the same point.
They want to have them meeting at roughly the same point. And because they're matching for quite a long region far away from it, they all end up being roughly in the same direction. But even though I think the fact they're meeting here at a point is more of a coincidence than anything else. It could have been this dashed line could have met a lot earlier. The point is it's not going to follow the flash warping at all. And in fact it's gonna be something even worse. If you did want to end inflation scenario, you would have to end it by the screen, by having the brain meet an antibrain. This is not so unrealistic to plan anything. In constructing these probes, they construct by having a large number of antinuclear brains at the bottom, which generates the warping. So the brain which is actually identified in place on this catch towards the antinuclear brains. So when it hits the tip, it is annihilated. But generally, this is just done by evolving the inflation for enough equals to deal with getting 60 equals, so like the price problem, and then just stopping, not thinking about that problem. So, if you do have a mass gap solution, then as soon as the brain starts to get into the region of mu, where mu becomes important, then the warping is like inherently different.
It's okay. I mean, you're basically just using these as phenomenological models for it.
Exactly. The full Kavanaugh stress test solution is quite complicated. It has very many parameters involving related to screening things into the construct of the infrared itself. And they're just not relevant from a cosmological point of view. At least not on the best practice. So you can generally just speaking of, and I'm allegedly trying to get process behaviors associated with approach and in this stuff. And then match these two parameters. Okay. So the second parameter here, the second part of the action is the boost factor. The boost factor is the thing which is causing the speed limits being posted on the motion of the frame. Explicitly, in a, if the field X is homogeneous, it looks like this. We see it looks a bit like the Lorentz factor in special relativity, but with the exception of you've got a warp factor under the square root. And taking, for example, the ADS solution from the previous page, F is proportional to pi to the minus 4. So as pi gets smaller and smaller and smaller, as the range is moving towards the tip of the probe, then it has to slow down in order to keep this real. So it doesn't get to, so we don't get a situation where the F kind of squares. Boost factor gets larger and larger and larger as the pressure proceeds. So just explain my convention for drawing graphs during inflation. I always draw them almost backwards, as it were, because we care about the last 60 epochs of inflation. And I'm going to be stacking many trajectories on top of each other in the later graphs. So I want to have 0 being the end of inflation, roughly 60 being the beginning, and inflation proceeding there. So the number of epochs, 20 for example, means 20 epochs to go in inflation. The gamma factor starts off very small, increases, and as soon as the field starts to come in, gets to a point in the vicinity of the mass scale mu, then gamma starts to drop and get oscillations. So, PPI field, like the normal scale field, has potential. The potential is generally contains three elements. You've got a constant term, you've got a quadratic term, and also a term which is got some inverse powers of the field. But generally, in the cosmology side of things, we generally care about just the quadratic, partly for simplicity, and partly because the quadratic potential by itself has been shown to be very safe against back reaction of the energy of the brain itself on the brain geometry. So, I'm going to follow the general conventions just some interesting changes to the coupling I'm going to introduce we'll have on the model. So I'm going to just think of the general conventions. But so we can use a much, much higher mass than the standard conventional models. Use the gamma factor to slow down the model. Okay. So if you stick in the flat premium running to a Walker metric, we can just get premium equations and equations of motion for the field. So premium equation here, got a potential term there and also a slightly modified kinetic term in terms of gamma and the warp factor. If in the limit this gamma is very small, this will actually reduce the standard scale of field equation. Also we have slightly modified expression for H dot, just another gamma factor coming in here. And we can divide this equation by this equation to get the slow roll parameter, and see you get something like this. So, see that if we want the slow roll parameter to be small, then we have to put the warping to be quite large. So, generally, the warping is actually enormously large in this model. Whereas the parameter F has got a value around 10 to the 10 to the 12, so normally inflation. If we also work out the equation of state, these models. By the pressure by the energy density, we get a similar thing here. We've got FB. So even with relatively large values, the boost factor is still going to be roughly around minus 1, because FB is so large. I'll show some plots of these things in a minute to get a handle on them. But first of all, the TBI equation of motion looks horrendous, but it's not actually so bad. We have standard 3H term. We've got corrections with gamma to the minus 2, gamma to the minus 3, things like this. Also, derivatives of the warp factor with respect to the field value. But in the simplest approximation, when the field is rolling and the boost factor becomes very large, then we can drop terms which have gamma to the minus 3 and gamma to the minus 2 become less important. And the most dominant contributions to this equation become the first term and third term. This term here. And we can use the ADS, the simple ADS solution where F is lambda. Pi to the minus 4, and the late time solution ends up being pi is going as 1 over 2. This gives you a power law inflation, and you can get explicit and you can use their Hamilton Jack Field approach as well to express calculations for epsilon and gamma. So in this case, epsilon actually contains a factor of mass as well as the warping. Differential to standard spheroidal equation. So larger mass gives you a smaller spheroidal parameter. And the C gamma is just increasing and increasing and increasing. So just to get a handle on this, this is the graph I've already showed, the boost factor increasing pressure inflation. You see here we've got the equation of space very close to minus one. And epsilon, approximately constant, but still very small, throughout the inflation increasing. And pi is just going from its maximum, from its starting value around 1.5 all the way down to zero. Generally, the value, the field value you have to consider within UBF would be much smaller than the large field inflation. Partly due to the dealing with something that's moving in compacted power space, so you haven't got that much freedom to play with. You can't have it moving 20 people, anything like that. So 20 values in any kind of
so with the space, this your choice of initial pinch, then you, I guess you're spreading, you want to match the data at default, is that the goal here?
Yeah, so this, I'm doing this in a slightly different way people normally do DBI inflation. Normally the people will say that there was, you only observe perhaps 10, 15 defaults, so you only have to do 10 or 15 defaults, and you can account for the rest of the inflation by some other means. But you can actually, I say you can just let the change the values of the warp factor and so on, let the field run. You get very, very large values of the boost factor and get your 60 points if you like. But this is a problem I've got in the middle of non-gas amplitudes because the level of non-gas amplitude is proportional to gamma squared. So you get enormous values. This is a very unrealistic model in that sense, but it is a little of the features that can be abstract in DBI model.
Yeah, so this is limited, but this is, and right now, just from the graph, it looks like it. But the observable number before you have wrong as anything, which is fine. You just bump that issue observable on that too big. But then the statement it becomes strongly coupled. If you have large wrong as anything, that big.
So in a situation like this, people generally assume that the brain is not moving particularly fast when it's starting, because it's not really affected by the warping. So gamma is initially like fairly small. It will then start moving, and depending on how you tune the parameters, give you different values of gamma, depending on how you start. You increase the warp factor, for example, you get considerably less inflation, but you might get different values of gamma during the step operation. This is a big problem. This sort of tuning is not very attractive, but anyway. This is partly the reason why I've been considering a couple models. So when we want to deal with the perturbations, we can use the fact that DBI inflation is an example of K inflation. So in K inflation, you have a Lagrangian, which is a function of field value and x, where x is the standard kinetic term. So this, for example, canonical scale field has x minus b, where b is the potential. So this, we can use the equation of motion which is get from the Lagrangian equations to just reproduce the standard scalar field equations of motion. Do the same thing for the DBI equations if you wanted to get the same result as shown. But the great thing about this is that we can use this standard result from Riga and Mukhanov to write the perturbations in a very easy to understand form. So what we do is find a variable that's proportional to the Kempe curvature perturbation. The proportionality factor to the set depends on the pressure, energy density, and also CS, where CS is the sound speed of the perturbations. So CS is the sound speed of the perturbations in the sense that it's a bit of this actual plastic in the equation of motion. So the inflation is given explicitly by this convention here, and we can work out that for the DBI inflation. So the perturbation equation looks like this. We have CS squared, K squared, and then, which is going to be important on very small scales. On larger scales, Chris has written things in terms of this factor Z, but it's nice in terms of derivative Z with respect to the variable. Tau here is the formula. So on small scales, this is the important term. We get oscillatory solutions, but very much similar to the Bunch-Davis vacuum, which is we've got a factor of CS, which is time-dependent.
on each side on the SWG prime. You can change the frequency, and we've also got that changes our standard normalization. On the larger scale of the solution, nu k is approximately z, but because nu was defined as being proportional to z in the first place, this means that r is constant on the larger scale. So, this is for DBI inflation. You can work out what CS is using the formula on the other side. That gives us CS squared is gamma to the minus 2. So the larger gamma gets, increases during DBI inflation, the smaller the sound speed gets. And this affects when we have this changeover between these two regimes, here and here. So most increasing in the sound horizon as opposed to the curvature radius. So this is just the top of the curvature perturbation for the sound run. Oscillates to more scales in the first optical line, which is the sound horizon, freezes in, rather than as a standard model at the curvature radius, the standard horizon. We see the perturbation equations are written with the explicit factor of the gamma to the minus 2. So, using the approximations that I went through earlier on, where we have an ABS version, drop the more complicated terms in the DBI equation, you can get a solution for the power spectrum amplitude in terms of the parameters, just using the gain equation. So, see that it's proportional to n to the 4 and lambda. We can use this to help us get an idea of what values of lambda and we're allowed to have in our models. Unfortunately, there isn't quite enough information here, so people generally work by saying, well, if we're going to have the slow-roll parameter of a certain size, this is what we're going to have for the power spectrum. Gives us the value for it gives you a value for lambda and n.
Can I just ask something? Just the way you've been presenting this review here is saying that you're only really looking at fluctuations in the chi field when you're doing this perturbation calculation. But
yeah.
I mean, is that all people do? I mean, sure, you should really be fluctuating the inflaton is not just a single real scalar, it's a position on the internal manifold, and all the angular variables could fluctuate as well. So it should all be,
I think it's an interesting question. So after people went through did this first call, then people went to do the other, like the radial coordinates. Because I mean, it's just a natural interpretation. You've got just a radial thing, you've got five other directions in the photon, so many directions are associated with the fields as well. So there was a great paper called Spinflation, where consider trajectories where the brain is not just moving straight down the photon, actually going round and round. So that's the sort of thing that look into, but it doesn't actually change much the major result.
Of course, that's where you've got the background and the inflationary trajectory having angular motion, but I was just thinking here, it's radial, but perturbation theory should have angular perturbations in it as well. And so all I was asking was, didn't people do that?
Not really, no.
Now they've got done the whole, the full Monty, right? They've done it properly.
The fluctuation along the direction is the adiabatic mode, right?
That's true, yeah. But there is some
need to make sure you don't get too much better.
Because it's not what you would simply expect from an orthogonal motion, because the DBI action is coming from a determinant, and so there are sort of subtleties about how the modes interplay. So that was really
It's a good question. But it can be treated fairly well. I mean, David Langlois some colleagues did some papers where they write the action of all radial coordinates involved as something that looks very much like a DBI action and work from there. You can get very simple expressions for all calculations, including everyone.
It didn't contribute too much
in that case. But there were some quite interesting results in terms of sound speed of the isocurvature perturbations is different to that of the adiabatic perturbations. They actually freeze out in homogeneous case, but not in the case where you have a special field. Lots of weird results like that are quite interesting. But I haven't really got much time, so it's okay. So For the spectral index, we've got a couple of effects. We've got the normal effect that we've got deviation from the space. So we get a red tilt. So the Hubble parameter is evolving the inflation. But also, modes are freezing in smaller and smaller scales, whose fractions are freezing. So this is something that's going to work in the opposite direction. And in fact, in the earliest models, the spectral index was 1 with order epsilon squared fractions. But this is actually very dependent on the warp factor that is used. They use the standard. The simple ADS approximation, and the denominators that can get slightly different results, also dependent on the potential. So this graph here is just an illustration of the sort of change you might expect when you are changing some of the parameters in the PGI model. The x-axis here is it's the ratio of the mass squared to the Hubble parameter squared. So it's how much, think of it as how much the quadratic particle is computed to the overall potential.
So it's not a beta that you...
It's not a beta from earlier on, it's just that I didn't take this one, so in normal inflation you have m squared over h squared is very tiny, which is a very small mass. So in this case the DVI reproduces something more similar to normal inflation, so you get the red tilt effect. Actually increased the mass of the DVI field by the contribution of the quadratic part to the potential of the DVI field. Then you get something similar to the original results when the spectral index is approximately 1. And then as you go down, as you have a larger and larger quadratic contribution, then these different colored dots, they represent different sorts of warp factors. So it seems there's a warp factor dependence if you increase this. And also, it is not only possible to get just one, but also much larger values as well, if you were dealing with different warp factors or different sorts of potentials. You can do lots of different sorts of potentials to be able to similar to the standard potential. So, the perturbations in the standard scale of perturbation are Gaussian in the sense that you can describe most of the higher order correlation functions in terms of the geometric function. This isn't necessarily true with more complicated models, including multiple field models, but in this PVI, we have this square root, so we have a hydrogen of reference, which is the x inverse. So we can get non Gaussian contributions to the non Gaussian CV signal. So this is, you have to estimate this correctly using the bispectrum. By spectrum, looking at the tendons for certain triangles of momentum. You can get a rough idea of how large the non Gaussian contribution is using the FNL estimator, which is usually defined as something along this sort of line, so it is dependent on the shapes that you're looking at. So you have the linear part, the perturbation, the linear part squared, and FNL is next to the linear part squared. So the boundaries on FNL is going to be roughly less than order 100. But for DVI inflation, the most important contribution to FNL takes the form, the most important contribution of shape of the bispectrum, which is down into FNL, takes this form with a factor of 1 over CS squared. CS is very, very tiny as the boost factor increases. This is a very tight limit on gamma. You see, the gamma is roughly less than 30, it's less than 20 or so if you use a slightly different bound, but it ends up being ridiculously much smaller than the values that are shown in the fiducial plot earlier on. So there's a very, very tight limit on DVI model. If you cannot have boost factor increases to arbitrary parameters. And it's not during the region when you are the perturbation during certain C and D operations. So I'm considering a model in which the DVI scenario is embedded into a scalar tensor theory. So the motivation of this study is purely phenomenological. Like, I'm interested in situations in which you have multiple fields and the couplings between these fields. And the scalar tensor theory provides an opportunity to make an interesting sort of coupling arising in two-field models. But you can, these sort of non-minimally coupled models do appear in a number of scenarios in kinds of physics. So things like F of R, theories in cosmology, field break and space operations as fields that normally mode coupled. So I'm considering a model with two fields. Chi is the PVI field that I've used so far. Also a canonical field, which is the scalar and the scalar tensor theory. So I'd say I am considering this purely phenomenologically, but it'd be interesting to find out if this actually could represent something that is a more say more realistic situation. Perhaps the field represents the five field represents the same issue, one like in the center. but I haven't looked into that aspect of things so far. And they say it's a question of paper that came out in the December. So just working into it, which I so this is the model we're considering. So we've got, this is our DBI actually, after the same system before. Here we have our scalar and scalar period. We have the standard ISO interaction mixed with f to the phi next to it. So this function f to the phi complicates the equation version quite considerably. And also the Einstein equation as well. You see that the equation version has not only derivatives of f with respect to the field, but also more derivatives there as well. But also other features like the kinetic term is still present, which is a problem. The DBI effect of the equations are changed because the system actually we have before. But the Einstein equations look terrible. But more derivatives of F, and it's just very difficult to deal with. So what we're going to do is transform into the Einstein equation, the Einstein frame, in which the field is the standard Hilbert actions we covered. So we need to use a conformal transformation. So you go to a new metric, G tilde, and we just to conform rather than to the scalar tensor, but to the cosmology, we find out A in terms of field, just as F minus minus a half. So, once we've gone to the new frame, and got a nice form of our gravity of the action, we're going to just redefine our scalar field so we get the standard scalar field action. Now the DBI field is still working on the old metric, so it's working on a metric which has got a factor of a squared, just in due to the fact due to the conformal transformation. That's going to be very important. So working with this Einstein action here, you see that this factors of a squared, in fact the reason it's because it's doing a metric a squared g mu, we're going to get a different action here with a factor of 8 to 4 here, and also a gamma factor is going to be changed. Because whenever we have a metric, we're going to get a factor of a squared coming along, and we've got a metric inside a square root. We've got a coupling under the square root in the DBI action. So in the homogeneous limit, which is the flat root of the normal metric in the Einstein frame, this translates to something very similar to what we saw before, which is a to minus 2. So from now on, I'm going to go back to the drawing from the proper tables, just the notation of convenience. So here are my motion in this case. The EBI one was very similar to the standard case, but now we've got factors of A going along. So we see that the effective mass of the EBI field has changed by factor of A squared and mass squared. And then we've also got terms on the right hand side in beta. So beta is a term that appears when you have just a derivative of log A with respect to the field. So I'm first simplicity because we already have a number of parameters. I'm sticking that to the constant. So this is this is the definition of beta. And beta just enters into both sides, which you have to exchange energy. So if you do set beta as constant, then you can write A as just being exponential of beta phi, and this is where it came into in the the earlier form, the Markov Fernand form I showed earlier on. So what the phi field here is coupling to, its left hand side is the same as normal, but it's coupling to the trace of the DBI specimens. So this takes quite a complicated form, but because we've got a factor of f to the minus 1, the first part is actually pretty much negligible, and you just have the potential contribution of course the factor of h to the 4 in the conformal translation. So that's on the right hand side of this equation. And the Friedman equations take a fairly similar form, just with a factor of A, the 4 in front of the DBI part, and A squared, the kinetic part. Okay. So, if there's no coupling between the fields, then they're just going to evolve separately. But DBI fields like to have a very large mass in order to evolve. So, the slow roll parameter was inversely proportional to the mass. So you need a large mass for the DBI field. The scalar field likes to have a light scalar field, needs a small mass in order to drive the equation. So generally, I found numerically, just by dealing with this and also by thinking about how the equations work, without fine tuning the masses, it means that the you only get one field dominant and the second field dominant. You get two separate theories of inflation, one driven by the phi field, followed by the chi field, or vice versa. So this looks something like this. We've got a number of plot cells, good for two of them, first of all. It's one in the middle that is, I think, perhaps the most important. This is the density premise of the DBI fields, and it's between 0 and 1. 1 being DBI dominant, 0 being canonical scalar field dominant. So this very line green, turquoise line, starts off with the DBI fields as the dominant and the canonical scalar field dominant. We see that as we proceed, this increases so that the DBI field is becoming more important. This is associated with a bump in the slow roll parameter here. So we have two separate periods of inflation. First of all, canonical scalar field, then DBI. And you see that at the top is the boost factor. The boost factor doesn't grow very much during this initial stage, it only grows later. Or the other way around, we consider what the situation with the DBI field is initially dominant. This bit is the back of the line here. The DBI field is dominant, its boost factor increases. So it reaches the vicinity of the bottom of the break where the mass scale mu is important. And gamma drops very suddenly, the DBI field becomes the dominant, and you get again a peak in the slow roll parameter. So these trajectories, if you look at the field space, are ones in which there's a very, very relatively tight corner. So fields start to have the initial values. In the turquoise one, the DBI field was initially, sorry, the pi field was initially the dominant, it runs down. About that much change in the DBI field, then suddenly it's only DBI evolution. And the same with the other one, which the DBI field is essentially the dominant field. So these are quite interesting from the point of view of adiabatic entropy fields, because this turn in field space is normally associated with a transfer of between entropic and adiabatic components. But another case that might be interesting is the case in which both fields are evolving at the same time. Instead of a short sharp burst, This transfer is always present. So these are these two red and blue lines here. You can see them on these graphs here. We see that the density parameter of DBI field is changing slowly, but no sharp changes going on. And the boost factor is increasing throughout the inflationary equation. Although we see that you can compare the blue and red lines here. There's a very small change in mass to get these different trajectories. Changing the relative masses of the two fields, and it gives very different behavior toward the end of the inflation. So it is very sensitive to this, so also very sensitive to the initial conditions of the field. So this is something I'd like to go on to later, look at possible correlations between the emerging things. But I'm going to leave this for the meantime, talk about non-minimal coupling, which is what I actually work on in this paper. So the reason the non-minimal coupling situation is actually more interesting from my point of view. Is because the phi field requires a minimum. The phi field requires a minimum.
Can I interrupt one question, Bill?
Yeah.
How are you doing on time? I'm a little worried that the.
I'm going to finish at around 20 past, I think. 25 past, I think. Because we were about 20 minutes in.
Oh, okay.
But I can speed up a bit. The last ones
by 29 out of 54, are you?
Oh, no, don't worry about that. That's the last ones are numerical plots. So it's like a bunch of them. So the ones where I'm showing one thing and then showing another thing. When it comes to those two slides. But no, don't worry about that. I don't want to bore you. So the reason I'm interested in non-minimal coupling is because the phi field requires a minimum. So it kind of ends up sitting in that minimum. And we know exactly where it is, and it gives us very natural initial conditions for the field. So this happens pretty much whenever the coupling beta is non-zero. We have our initial, which I'll give to the potentials that we see in a minute, that we have a potential runaway potential like this, for the bare potential of the field, then the contribution 8 to the 4 times DBI potential ends up being working the opposite way and giving you a minimum. Here. So because we have an equation for the effective potential, we can find out where the field is actually going to be. And it means we know very clearly where to put it when we start our numerical ones. So the two potentials I'm considering, one an extra potential based on the one on the field side. The second second one is just an offset quadratic potential. So I didn't want to use a standard quadratic potential because the first thing that this contribution does here is push it to negative values. And for negative values, the function A is e to the beta phi ends up being very, very tiny. And so it's not a very interesting case because you're suppressing the DBI theorem. DBI theorem is actually moderated by the factor of A. So just to show that this this is a more generic scenario than you might appear at first glance. These black curves here show the non-minimal and triple case of the particular values of the parameters taken here. Since you turn on the coupling, blue and red curves here, then the phi field, which is this thing here, starts from a quite large initial value very far away from its minimum, but straight down to its minimum. So we can consider, I'll be considering for the rest of the numerical ones, the phi is actually already in this minimum because this initial stage is so short. Also, as well, during this stage, when it is rushing towards minimum, the inflation is not being proceeding. The value of this plateau here is roughly 1, so the value of the slow parameter is unit here. This is not the inflation stage, more the kinesian stage.
And this motivation for putting in this linear
Well, we're putting it in the minimum. Or
no, you move the minimum, you put linear coupling to the external parameter.
The motivation was partly because I wanted to look at just how does the coupling affect the DBI inflation. I was utilizing the scalar tensor transformation, the scalar tensor period to get a coupling of this kind. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, but I'm wondering what is the physics that's giving rise to this example? There's a linear term when you expand the potential. You phi squared and
why this one here? Oh, yes. It's purely a phenomenological thing just to move the potential to different values. I could have done it potentially by redefining the value. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't have something e to the negative, or e to a small happening head. But it's not overly physical. It's just a way of getting values about doing another transformation of my field. It's a good question. It wouldn't be a linear term. I'm not worried about any questions at this stage. In fact, the exponential potential, I'm just using it kind of as a comparison to the exponential potential. See that whether any potential of the form sort of sloping this way, if I should give this sort of phenomenology, I'm interested in. So if you look at the background, then actually you know where the field is, we know it's in its minimum. So we can write down expression for the minimum of the exponential potential. And if you differentiate that aspect of time, see how it builds minimum. So just to get sort of a nice feel of what's going on here, we can consider this condition here. So these two terms are the terms that appear in the top of the slow roll function in the numerator. So if this condition here is true, then you get this condition here. So gamma has to be greater than this quantity. But because the DBI mass is actually very large, then we expect this to be roughly not too far away from order one, so not really, really tiny, but from normal inflation. So this condition here is somewhat similar to the condition that gamma has to be greater than order one. So saying that whenever the DBI field is affected by the DBI tensor's action, then we can neglect the contribution of phi dot squared to the enumeration of the slow roll function. So that means that we're really just assuming that only the DBI field is the one that's driving the inflation in the set. So you can just make some approximation for the raw parameter using this approximation and also approximation for the Friedman equation, which you can also use this expression to get. And this gives you this expression here. So this term here in brackets is the standard slow roll expression for the slow roll parameter expression for the DBI field. And what's in front of it is a squared over something that's roughly only 1. So if A is greater than 1, then we're going to get the value of the show rule parameter is smaller than the standard DBI scenario. Why is this interesting? Because the number of e-forwards is roughly inversely related to the show rule parameter. The number of e-forwards to the inflation initial to the final is proportional, has a factor of h to the minus, h dot f. We can relate h dot to f stop. For the gamma factor in there as well. It must very much get more important inflation than when it's in present. Also, the boost factor has a factor of 80 minus 2 there, so when A is large, an effective decrease will happen. These plots here are just showing what happens if we leave all the parameters the same and increase the coupling. So, starting from blue, going down all these various colors, you can distinguish them. And it doesn't really matter what the individual values are, going from going from beaches 0.1 to 1.5. But the maximum gamma is decreasing from a value of roughly 200 down to around 50, which we increase. And also the number of e-folds in the inflation we're seeing is increasing dramatically from something like 38, which is too small to count the entire inflation regime, to more than you actually need to have data. So, and this is very generic, it happens to both the exponential and quadratic potential that I consider. And it's basically because we see here the slow roll parameter increasing as you increase the coupling. Also, another interesting thing about these spots, this bottom one here, this is the density parameter, the DBI curve again. You see that DBI curves are not actually dominant, and the more you increase the coupling, the less contribution it makes to the overall energy density. It increases, increases, increases. Okay. This in itself is a little odd. Anyway, so the DBI field is clearly in control of what's going on. The phi field is stuck at its minimum, and the minimum is evolving very slowly to the DBI field drops. But yet, the DBI field is not the dominant contributor to the energy density. So, what I'd like to do is look at just get a rough idea of what conditions I have to actually have to. Sorry,
are you going to be down?
I don't know what conditions I actually need to have. A greater than 1, so I can get this interest in phenomenology, and also have the what conditions have to be satisfied with the DBI field to be a dominant contribution to the density. So I can work these out for both potentials, the offset quadratic, and the exponential. This W here is a lambda W function, which I've flashed up information to discuss a few slides ago. It doesn't really matter very much. So what I've got in these shaded regions. The region above all these solid lines represents the condition for the minimum for A to be greater than 1, or alternatively for the minimum of the field to be positive. This depends on the values of the ratio of DBI potential over the term in the pi field potential, mu naught. And so it takes very different values, but it seems very similar for both exponential and quadratic potential. It's the shaded region which I'm more interested. This shows you, this is the region of the DBI field is dominant. So, it's very, only a relatively small region on each diagram in which you have both of these things. You want a positive value of the minimum, and if you want it, the DBI field to be dominant, it's quite hard to get that. You're comparing that to some numerical results at the end. And this is just to illustrate that with the offset quadratic potential, you get very similar phenomenology. The difference is perhaps that you have a minimum for the field rather than a bare minimum. The field. So the trajectories in field space here all tend to converge on that minimum. But other than that, it's very similar. As we increase the coupling, the boost factor goes down and down and down, and we get a much better degree of inflation. Okay. So for the perturbations, you can go for the normal procedures. You can press the fields into a background and small perturbation, and use that metric to test the original variation seen for some no stress, these two things are equal. And you can use this to form the Mukhanov static variables for each of the fields. So, gauge variable contributions here and here for phi and chi. So, if you use the fact that sound speed in this case is equal to gamma to minus 2, you can get these equations here, which I've written in terms of the sound speed. So, the first equation is the equation of motion for the human phi. I think we see there's a number of contributions to the standard friction term. And you've got two things here, B there and B there. which are related to each other. These are the extra fridges and an inline field. There's no CS here at all. So the British Federation should be freezing out of the standard fridging for us. These ones here, freezing out the sound horizon. And we have an extra mass term here. Also, again, we have some more friction terms in DVI, because proportional to the coupling and also proportional to the time speed. So all of these terms here, I'm not going to go through them all, but they're proportional to, they contain a number of factors. Some of them due to the coupling, some of them due to the fact that sound speed is different to 1. So for example, here we have, this is the BX term that appears here. You see they've got one term here proportional to beta, and one term here is 1 minus CS. So if you take the limit that CS is really close to 1, so it's standards square off, and we take the limit that beta goes to 0, so minimally coupled, then that term and equivalently the B pi term is not present. So they do reduce to the standard equation. I'm not going to go through the rest of them, they are quite horrendous. So it's just a justification for solving numerically. So if you do want to solve them numerically, we can think about sort of initial conditions. So defining sort of auxiliary variables new, similar to the K inflection case, we can write the equation in such a way that the friction terms, this one and this one, disappear. And we can get something that looks a bit complicated, but it's not really that bad. These terms are basically mass terms. Here we have our KCS and our K, just as before. So, assuming that we can neglect correlations between perturbations and most people's like horizon, that is a big assumption, but one just normally is in the literature. It's fair enough for a first step. Then we can just look at the short wavelength solutions and have Punch Davies vacuum for the first field, and slightly modified Punch Davies vacuum to the standard DVI one we showed earlier on for the DVI field. So they said it should be uncorrelated deep inside the horizon. So to do this numerically, you have to actually do two runs for perturbations, one with one field in the Punch Davies vacuum, and the other one just set to 0, and then the other one with the high field, and it's similar to Punch Davies vacuum. You have them both go at the same time, then combine them. So you combine them by working out the co-moving curve to perturbation for each case, but this model is just given by this. One contribution here for one field, second contribution with a factor of A, the high field, you can combine them in this way. This ensures that they are uncorrelated deep inside the horizon. So we're also interested in perhaps the possibility of any isocurvature modes in these models. We've got R dot here. In this case, in general, it can be written in this way. We've got non-adiabatic pressure and a term here, which is the gauge invariant Kermit density perturbation. The gauge invariant Kermit density perturbation is just what appears on the right-hand side of the passing equation. So in the rate time or long wavelength limit when k is very small, you can neglect this term, and it's this that's going to give any contribution to the evolution of the moving perturbation on large scales. So you work it out for this particular model, you get something like this. Defined here an adiabatic field in exactly the same way as we had in the previous case, such that it's proportional to the moving perturbation. And I've defined it in the entropy for this or problem for this. So you get a number of terms here. First of all, we have a term in delta rho m, which has disappeared in the long wavelength, in the long wavelength limit. We get a term here that's proportional to delta s, just in the same way as we get in the standard tuple case I showed earlier on. What you need is this a term that depends explicitly on the adiabatic field perturbation. And also, we've got a term here that I've kind of defined in the Q gamma. So Q gamma is just it's a gauge invariant thing in terms of the delta gamma and gamma dot. So it could be written in terms of the other two, it could be written in terms of the original fields, but it's just nice to block it up like that. The point is that you can't decompose it into purely an adiabatic and entropic contribution using this way. So the nice normal way of splitting things up using a rotational field space doesn't work. The reason for this is because there's no nice metric in which you could form this. If you had lots of fields, like radial fields and things, you could decompose it very nicely. Just using the metric of the radial directions and the angular directions and things. In this case, we've got one field that's square root plus another field that's not, and it can work nicely. There are other ways of doing this, but I'd like to get onto later. To see exactly what can happen in the case in which the nodes are uncoupled. But in the case they are coupled, in the case of the main field, it's not actually a problem. So these plots here show the perturbations for the exponential potential. These ones here are the five are the DVI perturbations. These ones here are the perturbations of the pipeline. So if there are two runs, in this run here, the perturbations of the DVI field are negligible at early times. And you see that the perturbations of the pi field just decrease and decrease and decrease between whatever time. The pi field, on the other hand, here, the dotted line freezes in the sound of the dotted line, just like expected. Here, this is the non-adiabatic pressure perturbation that I showed earlier on. Decreases rather than pressure because it gets very, very tiny, so there is no exchange between adiabatic and adiabatic units in this case. But purely because we're dealing with an effectively single field system. One field is in spin and stuck, perturbations are suppressed. And the curvature perturbation, this is the contribution that's mainly from the pi field. DVI contribution dominates and freezes out the sound horizon as expected. So, bottom line here just shows some. So the bottom line here shows the evolution of how the spectral index and the power spectrum amplitude changes if you vary the coupling for this model. So what's striking is that the spectral index is well above what you actually need. It's a blue sort of spectrum. Here the power spectrum amplitude varies with the number of, basically with the number of defaults. Because as you increase beta, you increase the coupling, you increase the number of defaults, and this leads you to larger power spectrum. But with this particular model with very large gamma, you're not going to see that much. There's no agreement with respect to that. So what I'm interested in doing, this is more of my recent work, I'm interested in seeing if there are any regions in the Fermi space that actually, correspond to observable values of the spectral index and power spectrum amplitude. So we have six parameters in the model. Coupling, beta that introduced two factors of the warp factor, two parameters in the warp factor, and the mass gap solution, and parameters in the field potential. Beta is the slope of the exponential potential or the offset in the quadratic potential. So we can constrain the background solution by looking at things like the number of equals and the boost factor and things. What we're really interested in is looking at the perturbation properties. What does the spectral index turn out to be? What's the power spectrum? First class is kind of a brute force, I think, integrating the perturbations millions of times, seeing what regions of the parameter space give you reasonable inflation and projection. So these are the results of the spectral index in a couple of directions, a couple of planes in the parameter space. This is a six dimension show, and you can see two way graph, kind of looking through the rest of the dimensions. So the one on the left here is the parameters that are in canonical scale of field potential. On the right here, I've got the DVI mass scale and the pi mass scale on the y-axis. So what's notable here is that this like clearly very two different colored points, and the color here corresponds to the value of the spectral index. So the yellow ones here have got yellow to red points here have got spectral index greater than 1. Blue ones got spectral index less than 1. Blue ones got spectral index less than one, and they clearly occupy quite different regions of the parameter space. They're just very blurry, they show running through so many other parameters. The volume of the parameter space is actually pretty large. So these are the plots that have already been matched to the power spectrum amplitude. So normally in the first procedure, you would match the, you would get the mass of the field by matching to the center value. I just selected those plots which are within the reasonable range. This is the same color scheme, same thing as before, but just showing a correlation between the boost factor and the spectral index. You see that all of the yellow red points you saw earlier on, finding a separate region, these are points in which the boost factor at the beginning of inflation, or rather the boost factor when the models are, when the expectation that horizon here end up being, are already quite large. They're quite large here, and this is the maximum value that they reach during inflation. So it starts up here, and you go on, much, much larger value, which this is a log scale. So when you see anything that's really like a TBI model, large values of gamma of 100 or 1,000, these models are all ruled out, basically, by the spectral index being much too large. The ones which have spectral index within a reasonable range, so this green band here, these ones are the ones in which the spectral index, which the value of gamma and the most approximate horizon, is really tiny. So something, this is gamma minus 1, and we've got 10 to the minus 2 here, 10 to the minus 1. So it's basically, it looks like a square rule model, where the modes are crossing the horizon. And this is what's giving you a spectral index within the observable bands. It doesn't mean that we're boring and ordinary, though, because if you look at the maximum value, there are some which have a maximum value around 100, something of order 50 or so. All these things here, they're exhibiting DBI characteristics, but they've been, have their DBI characteristics suppressed at early times. So, just to finish, how could this happen? So what can happen is the coupling is so large that the warp factor like is too small at the beginning of inflation to actually give you any DBI phenomenology, any DBI effects. So the DBI, the risk factor is tiny, 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 and then increases later on with the inflation. But we're still seeing the same thing we saw earlier on, increasing the coupling from blue, red, black, etc. Gives you more e-forward to inflation, decreases the risk factor. Just say the perturbation is very similar to what we saw before, the exception that in this case we don't have two separate vertical lines corresponding to a sound horizon and the temperature radius, because they aren't on the picture. The sound speed is approximately 1 during this regime. So they look very, very similar to standard inflation perturbations. But yet, again, we have no non-adiabatic pressure contribution. So no interesting adiabatic isotope. Finally, just to say, so this is just some different views of the primary space, but perhaps we have to see the but large coupling is correlated with a long period of inflation. The number of e-folds here on the right, large values are red, correlate with large values of the coupling parameter A here, in the green regions. So large values of the coupling, large values of the long period of inflation procedure. And also a different view. And finally, I showed you this plot earlier on. These are the regions, the shaded regions being the regions which are DBI dominant solutions. Compare this to the numerical results. The slight change because I cut off at the value of 1, 0.5 rather than 0 in previous. But these two planes are very, very similar. Just, the shaded regions have been ignored because there are. DBI dominant solutions are just something that do not contribute to the runs which give rise to spectral index to many observable ranges. For future work, I'd like to go on to improving this numerical procedure for a start, including special observations in running the spectral index and relationships between tensor scalar ratio and other things like that. It can be included within this model to get a better grip on what's. What's acceptable and what's not, and then moving on to the minimally coupled case. You've got two separate fields, and you've got the transfer between adiabatic and entropy modes, vice versa. And finally, you'd be interested in the non Gaussian sensitivity of the vice direction for this model. That's all. So I'll just leave my summary on the screen. Any questions?